Okay, well, thanks to Ruth and Mary Beth and all the organizers of this. I was really excited to get invited to talk at this because it's something that I think is obviously really important, but also something that we don't talk enough about, even though Ruth has been very active in promoting this, not just in a soils context, but also in an ecological context. And by the way, this photograph is actually of the study that Craig featured in his talk, the clear-cutting study. The clear-cut watershed here on the left is Watershed 5 at the Hubbard Brook Experimental Forest, and the control site is just to the left. I'm going to be using data from this same project for my talk today to talk a little bit about how the statistical aspects of sampling by horizons versus sampling by layers, and maybe talk a little bit about some of the advantages and disadvantages of both. So the data that I'll be talking about were collected using the so-called quantitative pit method, in which we excavate a square pit that is a half a square meter in area. We go down as straight as we can in the sides, and we make incremental depth measurements to get volumes. All of the soil that's excavated from the pit is screened in the field so that we get a rock weight and we get a soil weight. All of it is weighed. We take subsamples to get moisture content, and then through a whole bunch of calculations, we wind up with the soil mass per layer. We do this on the top 10 centimeters of the mineral soil, 10 to 20 centimeters of mineral soil, and then from the 20 centimeter level all the way down to sea or bedrock. Those are the three main mineral soil layers that we collect. We also get the organic horizons by horizon as well. So the advantages of depth sampling, probably the biggest one, is that it's quite reproducible and it doesn't require any expert knowledge in terms of delineating horizons. So you can send a team of graduate students out there and with a little bit of training expect that they will get reasonably good and reproducible data. And so you 5 years later, when all those grad students are gone, you can send another group of five grad students out there and get a comparable set of samples, where that might not be true if you're going out and you're collecting horizons. It's relatively easy to collect depth samples, especially if you don't use this quantitative approach and you just get a sample from each of these layers. And it's statistically efficient in the sense that not all soil profiles will have all soil horizons. So if you dig 60 soil pits, you might only get 48 of a particular horizon, or 32. And so if you want to get to a certain sample size, you can always count on there being a 0 to 10 layer, even if it's not even fully 10 centimeters, you'll get something for that top layer. If you use the quantitative pit method specifically, there's some additional advantages. The samples integrate all of the soil in the layer, so you don't have to worry about, did I collect more sample from the top of the layer and less from the bottom, because everything comes out of the pit, everything goes on the screen, everything gets subsampled, so it should be a fairly representative sample. The soil mass per unit area is a direct result of the method, so that you don't actually have to, you can calculate bulk densities, but you don't actually need the bulk densities to calculate the soil masses. So in stony soils like we have at Hubbard Brook, that's a huge advantage of this method. And then finally, you can calculate bulk density and also get an estimate of the coarse fragment volume in the soils through this quantitative method. So horizon sampling, we dig these square soil pits, and actually, because of some criticisms of a grant proposal that initially funded the work, in addition to collecting these layers, we went back out and in those pits collected samples from the various horizons. So a nice square pit, big enough to crawl down in, and so we get samples from three lines on each of the four sides of the pit, so a total of 12 different lines for these profiles. So this is an example of one of the quote-unquote pit maps that we put together. There's four panels, so you're basically unwrapping the four sides of these pits, and where you see breaks in the lines, that's just where we measured the various profiles. Like a lot of soils, you can see that even in an area of a half a square meter, there's a lot of variation in the depths of the different horizons, both the depth at which they occur and also the thickness of the horizon in the field. So when you compare these horizon maps to the 0 to 10, 10 to 20, and 20 to C layers for this particular site, you can see that any particular horizon could be in more than one of these depth layers. So in these spodosol soils, The E horizon sometimes extends well below 10 centimeters, but in other cases, it's the top horizons are so shallow, like if I can, oops, let's see if I can get my. Well, I'm supposed to use the mouse, but I can't. Anyway, so you can see in some cases, even this BS1 horizon, the third horizon down, falls in the upper 10 centimeters. So the horizons, you know, can occur in all of the different layers. So the advantages of the horizon sampling then are, first of all, and perhaps most importantly, the ease of interpretation, because horizons reflect soil processes. So if you're doing a study and you see that the pH of the BH horizon increases from 4.0 to 4.2 over a period of time, you can interpret that number in the context of the soil forming factors and the soil development processes that are occurring at your site. So that's really a useful thing in terms of understanding and publishing the results of your work. Potentially, it's also quite statistically efficient for a variety of reasons. First of all, horizons, after all, are differentiated by factors of chemistry, texture, organic matter content, and things like that. So the chemical properties of those horizons should be relatively consistent for different horizons. So E horizons, these bleached layers, should be quite different chemically than the BH horizons that are below them. Then when you look at, compare that with the depth samples, the depth layers, as you've seen, incorporate various horizons, so that ought to increase the heterogeneity of those samples. And of course, the presence or absence of different horizons will mean that the 0 to 10 layer from pit to pit to pit will be quite different as well. So one would expect then that the data derived from horizon sampling should be less variable than the data derived from the sampling of depth layers. So the question for today that I want to talk to you about is that really true? And if so, to what extent is it true? So as I mentioned, the data that I'm going to talk about come from this experiment of a clear-cut watershed, Watershed 5 at Hubbard Brook. We dug 60 quantitative soil pits four times. They were sampled by depth increment, as I mentioned before. And in 1983, before that was the pre-cutting set of samples, 30 of the 60 pits were also sampled by pedogenic horizon. The whole tree harvest happened in 1983-1984. The sampling was repeated three times in 86, 91, and 97. Again, 60 pits were dug in each of those sampling years. And horizon sampling was carried out in each of those years in an increasing number of pits. Frankly, because we realized that there was some value in doing it. So we just increased 48 in 1986, 59 in 1991, and we did all 60 in 1997. Okay, so in terms of, the question is it statistically more efficient to sample by horizons or by layers? So we got to have a way to kind of compare those things. So looking at the average depths of the horizons in the soils that we sampled at Hubbard Brook, shown on this table here, with 3.5 centimeters average thickness for E horizons and 4.3 for BH horizons, accounting for the fact that there's some rocks in those layers as well. Those together would be reasonably comparable to our 0 to 10 centimeter layer. The BS1 horizon was most of the time in the 10 to 20 layer, so I'll compare those data to the 10 to 20 layer. And then the BS2 horizon was pretty much the bulk of the subsoil, and that will be compared to the 20 centimeter horizon down to C. So I'll talk about two particular chemical parameters, although we have data for many, many, many different chemical parameters. I'll talk about soil nitrogen, very ecologically important to many of us, and I'll also talk about exchangeable calcium as an example of exchangeable cations. So these are the data for the 1983 pits sampled before harvesting, and on the left table you can see the average values, the standard deviations, and coefficients of variation for the four pedogenic horizons. On the right, you can see the values for the corresponding mineral soil layers. So you can see if you look at the standard deviations that that the standard deviations for all four of the soil horizons are less than, at least numerically, than the standard deviations of all four of the layers, the pit layers. On a coefficient of variation basis, the E horizon, because it has a very low nitrogen concentration, has a rather high coefficient of variation. But aside from that, those values are also lower. We can test this statistically using an F-test for the equality of variances. That test is rather easy to carry out. You calculate the sample variances of two two populations, and you calculate F with the larger variance in the numerator and the smaller variance in the denominator, and then you compare that to a critical value of the chi-squared, the F distribution. So the table at the bottom of this slide shows the results of that test for total nitrogen, and you can see that comparing the E horizon to the 0 to 10, the BH horizon to the 0 to 10, the BS horizon, BS1 to the 10 to 20, and the BS2 to the 20 plus, in all four cases, all four comparisons, the horizon had a significantly lower variance than the corresponding layer sample. So it does appear, at least for nitrogen, that horizons do have lower variances than less variability than these layers. So then you can ask, are these important? How important are these differences in terms of the practical design of experiments? So I did a power calculation where I said, okay, if you're going to go out and you're going to collect 60 sets of samples and you're going to do it either by horizon or you're going to do it by layers, what is the difference that you could hope to detect based on those results? So I set the number of samples to 60, obviously. The alpha value for the significance of the test I set to 0.05. And then I used a power value of 0.75 as a sort of a relatively normal power. I didn't ratchet it up too high. I didn't want to make it too low. So I used a power of 0.75 for these calculations. So the table on the left shows for the four horizons that were part of this study. Shows in the rightmost column, it shows the percent change that would be detectable using horizon sampling for total nitrogen. The right table shows the same thing for the different layers. And so you can see that in the case of the horizons, in fact, for the BH, BS1, and BS2 horizons, a substantially lower, smaller change could be detected by sampling by horizon as opposed to sampling by layer. Again, the E horizon is a little bit odd, mostly because the concentration of nitrogen is so low, it's actually a very high percentage change. If you look at the detectable difference, the raw number, 0.42 grams per kilogram, that value is substantially lower than the detectable difference for the 0 to 10 layer. So it's a high percentage change, but it's a relatively small magnitude of change that you could detect. So bottom line, a change of about 20% would be detectable using horizons, but it would not be detectable using layers. The story was similar but a little different for exchangeable calcium. Again, the test for the equality of variances here, comparing the E horizon to the 0 to 10, in fact, there is a smaller variance for the horizon, 0.103, versus the 0.172 as the variance for the 0 to 10 layer. So a substantially lower variance, but because of the variability of the variance, that was not a statistically significant difference. The same for the comparison of the BS2 horizon and the 20 plus at the bottom of the table. Again, the horizon had a lower variance, but it wasn't statistically lower. In the case of the two comparisons in the middle, though, the variance for the horizon samples was, in fact, significantly less than the variance for the layers. Again, how important was this? I repeated the power calculation for these exchangeable calcium data, and you can see if you look at the magnitude of the detectable difference in centimoles of charge per kilogram, you can see that those differences, 0.156, 147, etc., are all smaller than the corresponding detectable differences in the layers, and the percent changes, again, the E horizon being a little odd because of its low value, the percent changes are also lower except for the BS2 horizon where they were about the same. But if you look at the magnitude of those percentage changes, 23 and 24% for the BH and BS1 horizon compared to 25, 35 for the 0 to 10 and 10 to 20 centimeters, they're substantial differences, but they're not. I wouldn't consider them to be huge differences. So to conclude, then, for total nitrogen and exchangeable calcium, and this plays out for other variables that are part of our study as well. The variance of the layer data, the actual variance value, the numerical variance of the layer data was always greater than the variance of the horizon data. In most cases, that difference was statistically significant. That was true in 6 of the 8 cases that I showed you, and that 75% holds up when you look at all of the different chemical parameters that we studied. Our power calculations suggest that sampling by horizon can reduce the detectable difference in the nitrogen concentration by about 50% or more, but the differences for exchangeable cations were quite a bit smaller. Now, some of you, perhaps many of you, are thinking, well, thanks, Captain Obvious. I didn't need you to spend 15 minutes of my life telling me something that I already knew. Horizons should be less variable than layers. To that, I would respond with three things. First of all, it's a fair point. Second, I think that even obvious things do need to be shown from time to time using statistics. And this data set is a fairly unique. I wouldn't say it's totally unique, but it's a fairly unique data set, a very large data set where we have both horizon and layer samples to make this comparison. So it's a good data set to use to try to prove these things statistically. The third thing though I would say is that these soils, these photosol soils at Hubbard Brook, are perhaps some of the most vertically heterogeneous soils that are out there. Spodosols, because of the striking E horizon and then the accumulation of organic matter and iron and aluminum below it, have very, very strong vertical heterogeneity. So when you look at these and you see the difference in the variance and the detectable differences between the layers and the horizons, most soils in the world are probably going to have more subtle differences. Soil types where the change in chemical concentrations are more gradual, the difference between layer sampling and horizon sampling is going to probably be a lot less profound than they are in these soils. So I would suggest that even though the statistics are telling us that the horizon samples will save us from a statistical perspective, will save us some, will get us something in terms of lower detectable changes, I still think that for many ecological studies, the practical advantages of sampling by layers will outweigh the statistical advantages of sampling by horizons. At a place like Hubbard Brook, perhaps not, but in many, many of the sites that you all study, it may very well be that even though you might save a little bit statistically by sampling by horizon, you might gain a lot more by sampling by layer. And of course, that's something we can talk about in more detail. So thank you. Okay, so I've been asked by the powers that be to repeat questions. So the questions were, what happens when you try to take your horizon data and calculate it out into mass per unit area? Are there additional uncertainties that get inserted there? And then the second was, what about sampling horizons? Are you sampling right in the middle, or are you sampling actually the whole horizon? Let me take the second one first, because that's a really important question, and it's something that I think in soils like these where the horizons are so thin, many of us don't do well. So if you have an E horizon, for example, that is 6 or 8 centimeters thick here, but everywhere else in the pit it's just a sliver, you're going to probably sample a lot in the place where you can get a lot of sample relatively quickly, and less in the places where it's just a little ribbon. And so I think that is definitely something that's a bias that's very, very difficult to quantify. I have another talk that I give sometimes where I take these data and using the measured coarse fragment volumes ramp up the mass calculations, which is the first part of your question. And actually, if you have decent values for coarse fragment volume, you actually do get pretty good estimates of soil masses compared to the actual measured soil masses from the pits. So that part of it works out pretty well. I'm kind of flopping between the two. But then finally, the last thing I wanted to go back to this slide here. If you just look at the nitrogen concentration for the 0 to 10 centimeter layer, 3.60 grams per kilogram, compare that to the E, BH, and BS1 horizons, which are easily the 0 to 10 layer, 1.24, 3.36, 2.81. So the 0 to 10 centimeter horizon nitrogen value is greater than all of the horizons that compose that layer, right? So clearly, clearly the way you sample those horizons does something to introduce some kind of bias, whether you want it to or not, in terms of what you're actually getting. Sorry for taking so long.
Nope, that's fine. Good questions. And we will have opportunities for discussion a little bit later. Okay. Thank you, Chris.